各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。拜登总统将出访中东，星期一白宫就这次访问做出了说明。国务卿布林肯访问东京，就安倍晋三遇刺表达慰问，在稍后的节目中我们一同关注。美国国务卿布林肯星期一在日本东京进行了一次短暂的特别访问，因前首相安倍晋三离世，代表拜登总统向日本政府和人民表达慰问。布林肯会见了日本现任首相岸田文雄，并将拜登总统写给安倍亲属的一封信递交给了岸田首相。布林肯说，安倍任首相期间将美日同盟关系推向新的高度，并赞扬他具有非凡的远见和实现远见的能力。布林肯当天还到美国驻东京大使馆，在那里与工作人员一道为安倍离世默哀。当天前美国总统特朗普和前国务卿蓬佩奥都表示，安倍是真正的朋友和亲爱的朋友。安倍上星期五在一次助选活动中遇刺身亡，享年67岁。美国海军派出了4艘实验性无人水面舰艇参加了2022年环太平洋军演。无人水面舰艇第一师指挥官说，无人水面舰艇的主要任务是加速向舰队提供可靠的无人系统，并与载人平台联合作战。
Purpose for Unmanned Surface Vessel Division 1 is twofold. One, to produce a program of record unmanned surface vessel for the fleet. And two, to find the right blend of sensors and systems that complement and work directly with manned platforms to make capable, adaptable partners between manned and unmanned systems, both with our Navy and other navies, as we are here for RIMPAC.See the pictures and the articles, and they do look a little similar. But I'm focused on our efforts here.
拜登总统将于本周三出访中东，他将历史性的从以色列直飞沙特阿拉伯。而拜登总统的此次访问也引发争议。详细情况，请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅。
是拜登总统即将在这个星期三的时候呢出访中东，那么访问以色列并且访问沙特阿拉伯。那我们知道呢，这个沙特阿拉伯之前因为一些人权的记录引发了争议。白宫的国安顾问沙利文在星期一的白宫新闻简报会上就说呢，这次的访问是拜登总统先访问的日本、韩国来巩固印太地区盟友，然后在美洲峰会上团结了美洲国家，又在欧洲增强北约之后来采取的中东之旅，那么要来增加中东的稳定。他说这个对美国是非常重要的，他并且表示呢，中东现在局势比就任之前还要稳定。那沙利文说呢，拜登总统将会历史性的从以色列直飞到沙特阿拉伯，这也象征中东地区局势的改善。那么讨论议题除了中东的区域议题之外呢，也将包括乌克兰这个受到了俄罗斯的侵略，还有能源安全跟中国构成的挑战等等。那我们也提到呢，拜登总统在竞选期间曾经因为华盛顿邮报的记者卡修吉被杀害的事件誓言要沙特阿拉伯付出代价成为贱民国家。不过呢，拜登总统在上周六投书了 华盛顿邮报说沙特是美国的战略伙伴，并且强调为了维护美国的利益并且对抗中国与俄罗斯，与沙特进行直接的接触是重要的。那白宫国安顾问沙利文在星期的简报会上也特别解释了拜登总统为什么会这样说。我们看一下沙利文怎么，沙利文说呢，我们的目标是一直重新调整，但是不破坏对沙特阿拉伯的关系，终止空白支票政策，并且寻求问责。这也是为什么呢，美国公布了情报界关于卡修吉被谋杀的报告，也是为什么对这个沙特实施制裁，还对76个人实施了签证的禁令。沙利文也强调呢，人权是美国的战略利益，能源安全也是，制止恐怖主义也是，那么在也门寻求和平也是，美国试图多管齐下，在各方面都要来推进这个关系，其中一项呢就是终止空白的支票的政策。那么最后呢，这个沙利文也表示，拜登总统在访问以色列期间呢，将会跟谈到美国支持以色列的国防，包括既有的这个铁穹防空系统跟其他新的武器系统，并且呢也将与巴勒斯坦的总统阿巴斯会面。沙利文说呢，无论在沙特或是以色列，拜登总统都会坚持人权的议题，也包括以色列以及巴勒斯坦在约旦河西岸所造成的冲突。卡拉。
好的，感谢耀毅从白宫发回的报道。在刚过去的周末，数千人在首都华盛顿特区游行，敦促拜登总统和行政当局采取措施保障堕胎权利。自上个月最高法院公布了推翻罗素维德案的判决之后，关于堕胎权利的争论持续发酵，拜登政府与国会都面临着紧迫压力。今天我们邀请美国之音记者方正来聊一聊美国三大权力机构在堕胎问题上的行动。欢迎方正。
大家好。
方正，我们刚才说到，自从这个六月底最高法院他是表示推翻罗素维德案的判决之后呢，拜登总统也是已经多次表示了说要采取行动来保护堕胎权利。那么先给我们介绍一下目前拜登政府采取了哪些行动。
最主要的行动是周五拜登总统签署了一项行政命令，然后我们看到周末还有数千人的抗议，有的是在白宫门口。在这以前呢，我们看到的抗议多数是在最高法院门口。到白宫门口去，我想也是民众一个呼声的表达，就是他们希望民主党的总统拜登总统能够采取措施保障甚至促进一点堕胎的权益。从礼拜五的行政命令来说，应该讲更多的是拜登总统的一种意愿的表达，因为实质内容是说他责成卫生与人力资源部去在现有的法律框架下寻找比较好的办法来保障堕胎的权利，然后30天内呢向总统汇报。同时他也强调，就是说中期选举即将到来，美国民众应该去投票，通过手头的选票来表达对堕胎权的支持，就是说你的选票的投向应该取决于候选人他在堕胎权议题上的立场。从总统本身接到的各种各样的建议来看，是很多的党内民主党内自由派人士希望维系堕胎权的人士提出了各种各样的建议，包括在那些比较保守的州，对堕胎权限制比较多的州，开放联邦设施，调遣一些联邦的资源来帮助需要堕胎手术的患者和医生。有的甚至还建议，比方说开放印第安保留区，因为各个州的，尤其在那些保守的州，那些印第安保留区他们本身是不受州法律的限制，他们有相对独立的司法权限，能够用他们的土地能够兴办堕胎诊所，为需要的妇女提供服务。但是像这些呢，基本上都不太能够实现，因为涉及到的可能有的法律的麻烦会比较多，非常的复杂。然后也有人跟建议，拜登总统好像礼拜天回应了一下，就是说是不是要宣布一个美国公共卫生的应急的状况。那拜登总统的回应是说，我们需要考虑我自己作为总统的行政权限在哪，这么做的益处和它的代价是什么。所有这些以外，真正有效的行政当局能够做的事儿，实现他们的理念保障堕胎权的话呢，可能是让目前 美国比较流行的那种两片的应急化学堕胎，就是药物堕胎，能够有比较好的保障，就是让他们能够更加的 accessible， 有需要的孕妇能够比较容易得到，尤其是那些在对堕胎限制比较多的州，那些女性使用的时候，它会有它的便利，然后也会免于可能的法律上的麻烦。这些呢，需要司法部，需要FDA， 需要卫生与人力资源部共同协作，可能颁布出一些新的规定来。比方说一个很具体的问题，就是在比较自由派的州，堕胎权限比较宽泛的州，可能他们允许有需要的女子和医生只需要远程就可以获得处方，通过邮寄就可以得到。可是这样的做法在非常保守的州就很难，很多州可能已经限制了邮寄这种两片的堕胎药，有的州呢可能打算限制。如果在联邦一级有一个基本的保障，当然对那些有需要的妇女来说是挺重要的。我想行政当局他能做的，在他们权限内比较及时比较方便能做的事，主要是让堕胎药包括应急避孕药能够更加的 available。
是，但是我们从目前 的情况来看，这个高法已经是推翻了罗素韦德案的判决，那么堕胎权利的决定权基本是已经交还给了各个州来决定。这就是为什么像你刚才说的，拜登总统也是鼓励选民去通过自己的选票来表达自己的这个态度。但是呢，支持堕胎权利的人士也希望像国会可以在联邦的层级来予以一个立法方面的保护。那么能不能给我们介绍一下目前这个国会做成形成立法的这个希望有多大？
这个问题非常的好。从高法的判决多数意见来说，从大法官阿利托写的意见来说，大家这么判决推翻罗素韦德案，是将堕胎议题交还给民主进程，交还给各州。那未来的一个焦点是各州，他会通过立法，通过行政手段。either 去扩大保障堕胎权 ，either 是限制堕胎权。那美国从州一级来说，目前多数的州都是共和党控制，是比较保守的，他们只会进一步出台限制堕胎的措施，让堕胎越来越困难。那些在少数但是人口比重并不少的那些州，比方说两大州加州和纽约州，他们除了保障本州居民的基本权限以外，他们可能还会有立法和行政手段来为未来可能到的从保守的州到加州到纽约这样自由派的州去寻求帮助的女子提供一些保障医疗的服务和免于法律麻烦的这种服务。更重要的，对于希望捍卫堕胎权的人士来说，他们希望国会能够 codify， 能够立法保障堕胎权。但是这就回到了我们长期观察的目前国会的工作的状况，到现在为止并不是特别特别的顺畅。拜登总统自己的几项主要的议程，包括科技竞争法案，包括气候法案，包括重建美好法案当中的很大一部分，目前都还在国会没有能够通过。这是由国会目前特殊的状况决定的。众议院民主党目前暂时没有问题，他们是多数，大多数的议程简单多数就可以通过。可是参议院在50-50的状况下非常的难，就是一个很有意思的循环。在参议院你要通过一项主要的法案，需要过 filibuster 60票的线，民主党没有，民主党只有50票。民主党可以争取去否定掉，去否决掉filibuster 的必要性，就是能够改革成参院议事的时候简单多数也都可以通过。可是目前民主党的两位在中间的参议员，就是亚利桑那的 Kirsten Sinema 和西弗吉尼亚的 Joe Manchin， 他们并不赞成要取消60票的门槛的限制，所以目前这就是一个僵局。指望在现在的状况下通过跟堕胎权限有关的有利于民主党的法案，这是几乎不可能的。前两个礼拜我看到马萨诸塞的参议员伊丽莎白·沃伦，女性参议员，非常好，原来哈佛的法学的教授，她上一个节目的时候呢，她表达出来一种非常乐观的情绪。她说， 中期选举战绩，他也寄希望中期选举。中期选举战绩并没那么困难的，我们只需要增加两个参议院的席位，我们只需要保持民主党在众院的多数席位，就完全有可能通过立法保障堕胎权。当时底下的反应是什么样的？一片寂静，连主持人都愣住了。因为我的判断是，沃伦参议员的乐观精神超过了在场的所有观众加上主持人的总和，因为几乎没有人认为民主党可能会在今年的中期选举里头保持住众院的多数席位，参议院也很可能丢掉多数，就别说再增加两票。增加两票对沃伦参议员来说是可以克服 Joe Manchin 和 Kirsten Sinema 他们不赞成废除 filibuster 的这个数量的限制。如果多了两票，就可以先废除 filibuster 六十票的限制，再通过简单的多数去立法。但是这个梦想其实还挺遥远的，这是在国会的状况。
好的，今天由于时间关系，我们就先聊到这儿了。非常感谢方正参加今天的节目。
谢谢卡乐。
当今真相为重，掌握全球脉动，只要点击 VOA Plus， 手指移动，信息即来，追踪政治动向，体验真实生活，世界各地的声音随时随地轻松获取。现在就下载 VOA Plus 应用程序 VOA Plus。
欢迎继续收看《美国观察》。在日本7月10号举行的国会上院参议院选举中，33岁的自民党候选人英利阿利菲亚是日本第一位维吾尔裔的政治候选人，也是这次选举中最年轻的挑战者。阿利菲亚在日本、中国和美国等地的成长和发展经历让他备受瞩目。一直到竞选前一个月，他还在纽约联合国总部任职，而这些标签对于他的竞选来说也是双刃剑。来看报道。
阿利菲亚，你获得日本执政党自民党的提名，参选将在7月10号举行的日本国会参议员选举。从你身上我们可以看到许多标签，包括33岁的你是这次选举中最年轻的参选人，在以男性为主要组成的日本政界争取一席之地。同时你还是全球第一位由执政党背书的维吾尔裔政治参选人，你的海外经验以及多元文化的背景在同质性高的日本社会是非常独特的。首先想请你和我们说说，你认为在这一次的选举当中你拥有哪些优势，当中是不是也有存在一些两面刃，某一些特质为参选增添一些挑战呢？
No, it's a very good question. I think it's, you know, a double-edged sword. The advantages is that because I have these labels, I, you know, immediately get more attention. And in the world of campaigning, especially, you know, because I started campaigning just a month ago, and, you know, a month ago I was a UN official with no name, and it was almost my job not to broadcast my name or my work, right? It was part of my job to be sort of quiet and silent. And hidden within an organization. So to come from that and to become a public figure in a month, so, you know, there are different labels, right? Like you said, I graduated from Georgetown, so I'm a Hoya, I'm also a Uyghur, I'm also Japanese. All of those things define me. But, you know, I think it's important that we all wait for the person to identify themselves before we identify them. And that's been one of my struggles with this campaign is that, you know, throughout my selection process with LDP, I felt that there was so much respect towards how I wanted to identify myself. So in none of the interview processes or selection processes, you know, have they asked, you know, what my identity was or how that impacts my policy. It was much more of, okay, this is your background, this is your name, and what is your policy and what do you want to do for Japan, which I really, really appreciated. But when you come out into the public, you know, it's you're a public figure and you're sort of up for any kind of comments and criticisms. And I struggled in the beginning of my campaign with a lot of, I think, identities that were sort of given to me by the public or through social media, through conversation, as opposed to identities that I wanted to sort of explain for myself. And especially in the beginning, I think it was that, you know, a lot of people focused on the fact that I was Uyghur, which is fine. But for me, the greater part of my identity, especially running for the upper house in Japan, is the fact that I was born in Kitakyushu, as you said. And I am, you know, a Kitakyushu woman born and raised, you know, and that's a huge core of my identity. And that's what really drives me when I see Japan or when I see where we should head as a country. The city I come from and the values I receive there is at the very core of the priorities I place for this country. And so it's a bit unfortunate that, you know, my multiple identities sort of distract from that. But at the same time, you know, being Uyghur and having gone to Georgetown, that is also at the very core of the diplomacy platform and the human rights platforms that I place. So, you know, it's multitudes of complexities that come together to sort of help me in shaping my worldview and shaping the direction I see for Japan. And I hope to be able to continue that conversation with, you know, depth and delicacy because it deserves that.
和我们说说你在中国成长的经验好吗？你居住过哪些地方？一般你是和哪些群体的互动比较多？你的维吾尔身份是否曾经让你被另眼相看呢？那另外对于新疆的这个名称，你有什么样的感觉？
So in China, I lived in Shanghai and Guangzhou mostly. My parents also lived in Beijing. Most of my teenage years were spent in China. But because I lived in China, I had the opportunity to visit the Uyghur region very often. And I've been very privileged and fortunate to be able to do so. As you might be aware, that's not quite possible currently. I haven't been able to visit since 2013. I've hesitated from visiting. And I think that's the case for many Uyghurs abroad. And as far as the term Xinjiang goes, right, it's literally in Chinese new frontier. And, you know, for me, as someone who has studied Uyghur studies, you know, it begs the question as to new to whom, right? It's not new to everybody. For folks who are native to the region, it's not new. And I think it's important that we respect how people from the region want to call themselves. It touches back on my answer on identity. But I think we have to be very respectful of how each person wants to refer to their homeland. And for Uyghurs abroad, you know, it's not Xinjiang, right? And I think that's something that needs to be respected.
对于发生在维吾尔人身上的事件，包括种族灭绝、强迫劳动、拘留营等等，你有什么样的看法？
I think it's one of the biggest human rights crises of our time. You know, there is no other way to describe it than to say that, you know, it is a genocide. I do believe it is a genocide. And there has been, being a former UN official, I also understand that, you know, the term genocide is a very heavy one. You know, I don't use it lightly. None of us should use it lightly. And having studied the, you know, Uyghur region and also having a background at the United Nations and having observed the developments of the region from 2016 onwards, especially, I am very careful in saying this. And I am very carefully convinced that there is no other term that is appropriate for what is happening in the region. It is a genocide. And at the same time, you know, in terms of the global sort of human rights framework, genocide is a legal term. It needs to be given by a legal mechanism. Unfortunately, you know, the Uyghur human rights issue has not been able to go through the international legal mechanisms that we would normally have for these kinds of issues for, you know, multiple reasons. And as a result, you know, we have to sort of refer to different states who have made legal determinations with international lawyers, and also legal courts that have been made that are independent. The Uyghur Tribunal is a representative one. And most of them have determined that this is a genocide. And I think we have to respect, you know, all the independent assessments that have been done, the lead of which is the Uyghur Tribunal, but also by different governments in different states, and really act accordingly and urgently to what is happening. There is no rank to human rights atrocities. Every human rights atrocity is an atrocity, but genocide is at the farthest core of that. And I think how we react to this genocide will really shape the course for how we as a global community will react to every human rights crisis coming forward. I think if a crime of this extent is allowed, I think we step into a world where anything is allowed. And that is why it is really important that we continue to raise our voice and we continue to sort of underline what is right and what is, you know, what is right when it's right and what is wrong when it's wrong.
民调显示，日本社会对中国社会的好感下降，有将近80%是没有好感的。这样子的变化主要是发生在习近平上台以后，还是说从江泽民、胡锦涛时期就不太好
？China, you have a one-party state, and so when you talk about China in Japan, and I think when they're asked this question, I think they're answering, you know, vis-a-vis how they see the Chinese government and how the country is run, and how their stance.Has been on, you know, principles that Japan finds important, which includes democracy, human rights, international rule-based order, and it's no secret that you know CCP has not been, you know, has not been abiding by those principles. And so I'm not surprised by the reaction of the Japanese populace in this regard. You know, and in terms of governance, we're so different, but at the same time, we're neighboring countries, and I think you know we're two countries that.Have to live with each other and live by each other and have a deep understanding of each other because we're so close to each other. And as a result, I think those sentiments are quite complex. And again, I would be very interested in seeing how the Japanese populace sees, for example, Chinese life or Chinese development over the past 2-3 decades, as well as how they see Chinese, you know, China's record on human rights. I'm sure it's quite negative.And economic sort of relationship with China.
你怎么看日本和台湾的关系以及台湾的地位？你有没有去过台湾？那台湾很多民众对日本是非常友好的。你能感觉到日本民众同样对台湾友好吗？
It's one of the places I really, really want to go. And as far as Japan-Taiwan relations goes, you know, I think we've had a great relationship over time. And as you say, you know, it's an incredible honor that the Taiwanese.Feel, you know, they feel positively towards us. And I think that sentiment is mutual, you know, and again, given the sort of declining, shrinking space for democracy, shrinking space for human rights, shrinking space for international rule-based order, and shrinking space for respect for sovereignty, as we see with Ukraine,I think it is paramount that Japan solidifies its relationship with Taiwan. And I think it's one of the most important relationships we have in East Asia. And I look forward to seeing that develop further.
日本社会存在哪些主要的问题？当选之后你计划带来什么样的改变？我们知道世界经济论坛最近有一份报告指出，日本政治权力当中的性别差距在全球155个国家当中排名147，甚至是落后于沙特阿拉伯。你怎么看这样的现象？为什么会这样子？那对于未来女性参政率的提高，你感到乐观吗？有没有可能将美国的经验运用在改善日本的社会问题上？
It's a great question. I think we're making great progress, but we're not there yet, right? So this time,LDP, for example, has placed a 30% target to have women, you know, nominated within the party. So to have, you know, 30% of nominations be women, to be female candidates. And they've set that target and they've met that target, which is, I think, a great start. But having come from the United Nations myself and being a woman myself,I do see 30% to be quite low. I think we need to get to 50. But where we are, I think...right now sort of having, you know, all parties in unison and all politicians in unison sort of recognize that women's rights is important and women's empowerment is an issue. I think that's a great start. And I look forward to that developing further.
以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们明天再见。